From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
The United States Border Patrol has exciting and rewarding career opportunities with the nation's largest law enforcement organization. Border Patrol agents enjoy great pay, outstanding federal benefits, and up to $20,000 in recruitment incentives for newly appointed agents. If you are looking for a way to serve something greater than yourself, consider the United States Border Patrol. Learn more online at cbp.gov/careers/USBP. That's cbp.gov/careers/USBP.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger, because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome into The Verge, a show which covers the Baltimore Orioles minor leagues. The Verge is part of BSL Radio. Baltimore Sports and Life is dedicated to analysis and discussion on the Orioles, Baltimore Ravens, and the University of Maryland. The site has a team of writers providing coverage of those teams and houses live streaming content weekly. Join the conversations at the message board, like BSL on Facebook, and follow BSL on Twitter.
Want to make a podcast? Spotify's got a platform that lets you make one super easily, then distribute it everywhere and even earn money, all in one place for free. It's called Spotify for Podcasters, and here's how it works. Spotify for Podcasters lets you record and edit podcasts right from your phone or computer, so no matter what your setup is like, you can start creating today. Then you can distribute your podcast to Spotify and everywhere else podcasts are heard. Video podcasts are also available on Spotify. With Spotify for Podcasters, you can earn money in a variety of ways, including ads and podcast subscriptions. And best of all, it's totally free with no catch. Ever since we discovered Spotify for Podcasters, we feel like having options like video podcasts and Q&A lets us be more creative on another level. I highly recommend you give it a try. Download the Spotify for Podcasters app or go to www.spotify.com/podcasters to get started.
Welcome on The Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined by Nick Stevens. Bob Phelan, our co-host, is out this week. But we have a lot going on this episode, including Connor Norby will be joining us for an interview. And then Nick and I will discuss the latest results of the January 15th international signing, headlined by the acquisition of Luis Almeida, who set a new record for international signing bonus from the Orioles. But first, as we do at the top of every episode, we want to introduce new members of our Patreon community. And for that, I will turn it over to Nick.
Yeah, let's see if I can do this. This is usually Bob's job, but we got one new patron since last week, Will Strickland. Welcome aboard. Thank you for your patronage. You did join at the AAA level, so that's awesome. We're still rolling out a top 30 or a top 50 countdown on Patreon. And actually, we got number 31 lined up for tomorrow. And for patrons, it is another player interview. We're going to talk to number 31 himself. So yeah, come join. Come hang out.
On tonight's episode, we are talking to the second round pick in the 2021 draft out of East Carolina University, who spent the 2022 season between three teams in the Orioles minor league system, hitting 29 home runs along the way. That included 17 at AA Bowie, and then four more at AAA Norfolk, where he hit the ball very well over his final nine games of the season. He is second baseman Connor Norby. Connor, how are you?
I'm good. Hope you guys are doing well.
Well, it's great to have you on here. We've certainly enjoyed watching you in the last year and a half that you've been part of the Orioles organization. Yes. And when you look back your first full year with the Orioles, what accomplishments are you particularly proud of?
It's a long year, and just being mentally there, I think every day that was the biggest challenge. But getting a year under my belt, I think that's one big thing. Getting to experience the life a little bit, the minor league life, professional baseball life. I mean, I think my season is summed up in, I think it's summed up in two seasons, really. And I've told everyone that. And I've seen both sides of the spectrum, the struggle, the parts when you're feeling good. I've seen it all. And getting to experience everything in that, all that in between, I think that's the part that stands out the most.
Was there anything either on the field or off the field that maybe challenged you in a way that you maybe didn't think it would, or you just weren't expecting as you adjusted to your first full season as a pro? Like, I know, for example, something big that we heard earlier in the year that was shocking to us to learn as we, you know, talk to more of you guys and learn more about the day-to-day grind of, you know, minor league life. But like Colton Cowser talking about focusing on his sleep schedule and how much that impacted him early on. Was there anything like that for you last year?
I think the biggest adjustment, in my opinion, was playing every single day. And you don't do that in college. You don't do that in high school. I think that was the biggest adjustment, and realizing that no matter if I played well or if I didn't play well, I'm going to be out there tomorrow. So whatever happened, I have to flush it. And I had some great advice going along the way from multiple people that helped me get to where I am today. And I think that was probably the biggest adjustment, is realizing like I'm playing 5-6 times a week. And whatever had happened last week, whatever happened last night, like it's a new day, it's a new at bat, it's a new pitch. Really understanding how to take it second by second, moment by moment.
I know you didn't play under the old minor league schedule, you know, 3 or 4 game series. Now you guys Monday off, 6 games at one spot. But are you able to like ever disconnect like during the week? And if so, like how do you go about kind of disconnecting from baseball?
I try to as best as I can. As far as when the jersey comes off, I become myself. I'm not the baseball player anymore. You try to separate the two, and I try to kick back and relax as much as I can. When I'm able to get away from the baseball side of things, I'll do it. Whether it's we'll take a trip to Washington, whether we take a trip to Baltimore, whether we play video games all day, watch a movie, whatever it may be, I try to just step away when I can, because it is a long year and mentally you need it.
Since being drafted, what adjustments have you made to hit for more power? Your home run numbers in your final season at ECU were a big uptick from what you had done before, but you took that a step further last year.
The thing that I learned at college was not making contact with every pitch so far deep, like, and it was learning to how to hit the ball at extension really and catch the ball a little further out in front, even if it's an away pitch, because I was storing so much power left in my backside. So I learned that, how to do that effectively in college, and it allowed me to still be able to do what I do, and that stay inside the baseball. And then this year, I think it was just believing in myself, trusting that I put a lot of time in the weight room and I spent hours in there, and I believe in swinging and I believe in my swing itself. And I think the two biggest things is for me this year were, did I swing at a good pitch, and was I in the right mind when I got up to the plate? And if I can answer those two, usually I find I can find some results, but that's just the thing. You got to find them.
One thing we've seen a lot about is how good you are at actually hitting the ball out to right center field, which is something that's getting a little bit more noticed now as right-handed hitters in the Orioles farm system because of the left field wall being moved back at Camden Yards. So is that something that's deliberate in your swing where you try to take the ball the other way, or is it just something that kind of happened over the course of the year?
I learned it at a young age. I get myself in trouble when I started to pull the ball. So the left field wall being moved back, really, I never really thought about it too much because it's like my – what I'd like to think my power is to center and to the gaps, especially a right center, and that's where I try to hit the ball. That's where I'm most effective is when I'm thinking that way. So when the wall got moved back, I really didn't think twice about it.
We had Kobe Mayo on a couple weeks ago and asked him who's going to get more home runs next year. Of course, he said himself, between the two of you, he said himself, but you might get him in the center field, right center department. Any response to Kobe's challenge there?
We'll see. We'll see. It's a long year. We'll see.
But your power display was certainly impressive all year, but it seemed like you particularly enjoyed hitting first inning home runs at all three levels. What was behind that impressive performance? I think at one point late in the year, Matt Sabatos, the voice at the Bay Sox, it was late in the season, it said, tweeted something about you, and you were tied with, I think, Jose Altuve for like the most first inning home runs in all of baseball. What was behind that?
Being leadoff hitter, I figured they're going to throw a fastball first pitch. And a lot of the times that first pitch might be the best one you see all night even. So I get a swing off, be ready for it. And then when I got to AAA, when I got there, Buck came up to me before the game and he tapped me on the shoulder and he was like, swing, first pitch, swing. So I did and it worked out. But I think sometimes you don't even get pitches to swing at, and then you don't get good pitches sometimes, and it is what it is. But if it's there, I try to be ready for it. And a lot of times that first one might be the best one you see. So they want to start off the count 0-1. I'm ready to swing.
A lot of analysis on our end and from our listeners goes into how different it is to hit at the ballparks throughout the Orioles minor league system. And it seems like Aberdeen is tough on hitters. Bowie tends to be a little bit more hitter-friendly, but how would you describe Norfolk? Because we've heard over the years that Norfolk can be a tough hitter's park, especially in the cold weather months, but it seemed like you hit pretty well there.
I mean, I only had three games there, so I guess we'll find out. But Bowie is, I think, a little bit more hitter-friendly than Aberdeen for sure. Aberdeen was a little bit tougher. I don't know. Mound might be a little bit high. Lights are a little bit tougher to see at night, just a little handful of things, but no excuse to why I shouldn't have performed better. But I think Bowie, when I got there, it was kind of like a sigh of relief because everyone was saying how the ball flies a little bit better, the wind blows out a little bit more, so that helped. And then in Norfolk, it's a big league park. Its dimensions are big leagues, so you got to be ready for it if you want to make it to the next level. You're also using big league balls. They tend to go a little bit further. They tend to get hit a little bit harder.
We always hear kind of from guys that move up from, you know, low A to double A or high A to double A about, you know, the pitchers being able to use better breaking stuff. You said you only had a couple games up there at the AAA level, so you didn't get to see too much. But from your couple of at-bats, maybe conversations with other guys, did you notice anything that stood out among the pitching from going from double A to AAA at the end of the year there?
My first week was against the Bulls, and they're the best minor league team the last 2 years. So it was kind of like welcome to it a little bit. So I was facing Yanni Chirinos and Glasnow was there rehabbing, and they had a handful of other guys, but it was awesome. I think guys' stuff gets better as you go on. I think the biggest jump, in my opinion, is high A to double A. As far as guys being able to locate their usage of off-speed pitches, their confidence in those pitches, I think that's the biggest jump. I would say AAA is guys that are more polished, and they're in between that big league, and some of them are big leaguers, some of them are established big leaguers that are there, and I think that was the biggest jump is they're just polished. They don't really make mistakes that much, but when they do, like, because every pitcher does. You got to just be ready for it.
What goes into that jump from high A to double A? Because it would seem like maybe in high A, you know, as someone who was drafted out of college, maybe you're seeing stuff that is similar to what you saw in Division One NCAA, but double A has to be much different, I would imagine.
Double A, yeah. High A was a lot. There's a lot of velo, and that's where I thought I saw most of the velo throughout the year was in double A or in high A. But when I got to double A, it was that usage of off-speed pitches, like I said, and the ability to land them in any count and their confidence in them. But I would say a lot, like the top tier college pitchers that I faced are like double A pitchers, in my opinion, if not higher. I faced plenty of them, like faced Gavin Williams, faced Kyle Harrison, those type of guys. But in college, I was Jack Leiter, Kumar Rocker. They're throw them in double A and then they'll have success.
Going back to your time in Aberdeen, what is that like for you? You talked about some of the things that maybe contributed to why it's difficult for hitters to be a little bit more successful at Aberdeen, but what's it like for you when maybe the results aren't there, but you know, you're making good contact on the ball, you know, you're doing everything right maybe one night, but the results just aren't there. What is that like for you, and how do you go through that, the day-to-day of that to get through that?
I think for the first month of the season, I thought I was the unluckiest hitter on the planet, it felt like. And I had several conversations with several people about just, you're doing the right things. Just keep finding the barrel. It'll work itself out. It all comes full circle eventually. Because my stats didn't show it, which, I mean, stats don't mean a lot nowadays, especially to the guys above me. But I was just unlucky, it felt like, and I was doing the right things. I was finding the barrel, and that's all you can ask as a hitter. And it was just, you feel like you're doing things right. You're not getting rewarded, and it's humbling for sure. I got humbled for sure that first month because I felt like I was doing everything I could do, and I just wasn't finding success per se. But it's at the end of the day, what got me through it was understanding that I just have to keep doing the right things. If I find the barrel more times than not, I will get rewarded just like any other hitter. And that's what sticks with me. If I hit a ball straight down, but I hit the barrel, so be it. I did my job. I found the barrel.
It seemed like, you know, having Roberto Mercado, the manager down there for the high Aberdeen Ironbirds last year, and you started there with Kobe Mayo and Colton Cowser and a big group of just talented guys. We know that Aberdeen team went on to make it to the high championship series. What kind of, you know, advice are that coaching staff giving you, and how instrumental were they in helping you work through a lot of that?
They were fun. All of them were really fun. And Berto really understood to let us kind of play. We'll figure ourselves out. We're going to win games. We're talented enough to win games. And if he just lets us play, we won a lot of them. He didn't try to micromanage things. He understood that we were looking to get better, and there was things that each of us wanted to do and how we had to improve individually. But at the end of the day, he let us play. And I think that's what led to the success, because he knew the talent that we had throughout the lineup, throughout the rotation, and he just kind of let us go.
The Orioles clearly love their defensive versatility with prospects, and you saw some time in left field last season. Did you have much experience working out or playing in the outfield while in ECU, or is this a relatively new experience for you?
I've never once played the outfield. I actually, when I was younger, they put me in the outfield one game, and I'd usually played short, and I remember playing outfield on the dirt still. And so I've never played out there. It was actually kind of my idea. I'd been bugging him about it for a little bit because I saw Taren, and I lean on Taren a lot at times, and I was watching him do both, and they were like, let's try it. So, and Taren happened to be rehabbing with us at the time, and they said, go take some fly balls with him, go pick his brain a little bit. So I did, and I enjoyed it, and it was one of those things that they did it for me, like let me play out there once a week to kind of get used to it, kind of get some work in. It also helped get me off my feet a little bit, grass is being on the grass more so than the dirt. But at the end of the day, I wanted to be out there because it increases my ability, increases my versatility, which versatility is never a bad thing.
What kind of, it sounds like you have had conversations with Taron Vavra, and it would seem like you all, the two of you have similar backgrounds, both are second basemen, both have a good understanding of the strike zone, both have good bat to ball skills. So how did you first get introduced to him, and what are your conversations like, and how do you try to pick his brain?
I kind of knew him, or figured, like, got to know him through Minnesota, the background of me being from Minnesota and him being a big hockey fan. So that's kind of how it got started. And getting to work with him at camp, and then when he was rehabbing in Aberdeen, and getting to know him there even better. And when he actually wasn't in AAA, but we still talk every couple weeks now. But getting to pick his brain on what he sees, what he's thinking in the box, how he goes about his work, that's the biggest thing, is watching what he does. And you try to pick apart guys like that, like Gunner, like Adley. When I'm around them, I try to see what they do to, for as far as prep work, and try to implement in my own way and see how it works for me. But how I got to know Taron was through the Minnesota background type thing. And he's been awesome.
Going back to your defense though, at second base, I think a lot of people, they see the home runs, they see the bat. But they always, a question we get all the time is, well, how's his defense for people, you know, who maybe aren't watching MILB TV or getting to the ballpark to watch you live? What's the defense at second base? So we had Tim DeJean on last week, and he said the biggest thing with you is that you give 100% every single time you're out there, and how hard you work to perfect your craft. What specifically have you been working on to improve your defense at second base and get ready for the next level now that you're just one step away from the major leagues?
The two biggest things I've taken into this offseason, and I'm looking forward to getting back to work with DJ and Buck and those guys that have really helped me along the way and helped me improve. But the two biggest things were being 100% confident in fielding with one hand, going to pick that before it gets that in-between hop, getting that hop, and then around the bag work at second, feeds, turns, that type of thing. But you can just, about this defense thing, I'll just let DJ answer that for all the people that are wondering.
He had high praise for your defense. So
you got a chance to play with Joey Ortiz a lot last year at Bowie and then again at Norfolk. What is it like to play alongside him in the infield?
Me and him kind of gelled right away. And I've met him before. I met him at camp last year, and getting to play with him, I think we clicked right from the get go, and getting to work with him every day. I think the words you guys use, or what DJ used, was he's a wizard, and he really is. So getting to work with him, and when I'm around people that are better than me or just as talented, like my game's going to raise, hopefully their game raises too. I always want to improve, and he's always eager to learn and improve it as well. And it's sometimes hard for him to improve because he's so good on the defensive side of the ball, but me and him kind of clicked and we rolled with it, and we became really close, over our time in Bowie. And when he left, I was kind of sad for a little bit because I was like, I don't have Joey up there up the middle with me, but I'm looking forward to getting back to work with him because he's awesome.
When you look at the upper levels of this system, you have yourself, talk about Taron Vavra, Joey Ortiz, Gunnar Henderson is up in the big leagues now, Jordan Westberg, Cesar Prieto, Daryl Hernandez. I mean, we can just keep going on and on, but all of you guys are in the upper levels of the minors now. How has this group impacted your development since joining the organization and getting to play alongside this really impressive deep group of middle infielders?
Like I said, I think competition brings out the best in anyone. And you just named a bunch of guys that are going to be in the big leagues for a long time. And when you're around that type of caliber of players, your game's going to elevate too. But I get to work with them every day, which is the cool part. And I get to see them every day and see how they go about their business. And they're I mean, they're great players and they will be continue to be for a long time. So getting is trying to pick their brains as much as I can without trying to be like the annoying little brother type person. But I hope to call them teammates soon. That's the goal. And I know we all have one goal, but they're top class people, top class players.
You're obviously playing with a lot of talented guys in the Orioles farm system right now. Is there a teammate of yours, whether it's a hitter or a pitcher, that you think flies under the radar a little bit, maybe doesn't get enough credit for how good they are?
I can name you five, probably. There's so many guys in this org. Sometimes it feels overwhelming at times because our organization is so loaded, and I tell people that all the time. It almost feels full at times, to be honest with you. But I think there's two big guys, and I think Daryl Hernandez is one, and I know you guys talked about him. He's young, he's talented, he's eager, he's hungry. I think John Rose is another. He's young, he's eager, he's hungry. But I think those are the two big guys to watch out for wherever they start. And when it clicks for them, it clicks and they're on.
Is there a guy, if you had to switch roles and they had to throw you on the mound, who is the one guy that in this organization that you do not want stepping in that batter's box to face against you?
I actually used to pitch too, but I'm not, there's no way I'm getting on the mound now. Does Adley count?
Yeah, we'll count Adley.
Okay, Adley. His plate discipline is too good. He would spit on all my stuff. I don't got anything to beat him with either.
I don't think many people do. So.
No, there's not many. There's really not. But his plate discipline, him and Taren have their understanding of what the strike zone is it's incredible.
So as we kind of wrap up here and your offseason wraps up, is there anything specific you've been focused on? You talked about a couple of things on the defensive side of things, but is there anything specifically that you've been focusing on this offseason as you prepare for 2023? And what are you looking to improve upon the most heading into next year?
The thing I'm looking to improve on the most this year is just finding that consistency, not riding the roller coaster, I like to say. But what I've been working on this offseason is the defensive side of the ball. Like I've said, I've worked a lot on that. And hitting, I love to hit. Everyone loves to hit, but I really love to hit. And just trying to find the barrels many times. I'll do a lot of different velos. I'll do a lot of different types of shapes off the machine. I just want to mash, in my opinion. So I'm trying to just find the barrel as much as I can and see how many. Try to hit some more homers this year, but we'll see.
Before we wrap up here, we do have a couple of questions for our listeners, and I'll start with Sterling in our Patreon group. What are some of your off-season hobbies, and if you game, are you an Xbox or PlayStation guy?
My hobbies. I love to watch movies. I do play the PlayStation. Those are about the only two things I do.
We did get a question from Keith Mayo. I think you may know him. He says, who's the bigger hockey fan, you or Kobe?
I am. Kobe just found out what hockey was a year ago. Let's relax. He's from Florida. There's no ice in Florida.
I've always wondered why there are so many hockey teams in the state of Florida. But
me and him really got into it last year, especially being roommates. And I expect nothing to change this year. We still talk hockey all the time.
So what is that dynamic like? Which teams are you guys rooting for?
He's a Panthers fan and I'm a Wild fan. But when we play, we'll play each other. And you can ask him who's up in the series because he knows. But we'll do a randoms. It's called three suicide or three randoms and a suicide. So you kind of just get what the game gives you and you'll play at those teams.
There seems to be some pretty intense competition between you guys when it comes to hockey.
They do get intense. A couple of controllers have been thrown before. Kobe's very vocal at times too. He can yell really loud. I feel bad for whoever's our apartment, who's ever neighbors to us in the apartments sometimes, but it's all in good fun. We enjoy it.
Well, Connor, best of luck to you. For a little bit of time that's left here in this offseason, in the spring training, we'll certainly be following you and rooting for you this year.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Quick word here from our sponsor, DraftKings. The NFL playoff action continues. We're one step closer to Super Bowl 57. And for the NFL divisional round, check out DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. New customers can bet just $5 and get $200 in free bets instantly. Plus, all new and exciting customers can take a shot at an even bigger payout with DraftKings stepped-up same-game parlays. Boost your NFL winnings with each leg you add up to 100%. Think Trevor Lawrence continues his Saturday streak against the Chiefs? Will the 49ers ride the hot hand of Mr. Irrelevant Brock Purdy against the Cowboys? Download a DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code on the Verge. New customers can bet $5 on the NFL divisional round and get $200 in free bets instantly. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code on the Verge. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. So, Nick, on that note, I know you're a Cowboys fan. How are you feeling after this weekend?
I'm feeling great. Cowboys ending Tom Brady's career, possibly. Yeah, it was a good weekend of football, but. Yeah, now I'm honestly, though, as much fun as these playoffs are, you know, we've been doing some more player interviews lately, and it's getting me more and more excited, though, for baseball. And the international signing last week certainly hyped up the excitement a little bit, we'll say.
Yeah, absolutely. And that discussion with Connor was great. Mm-hmm. You know, I think we've heard for a long time how smart of a hitter he is. You know, his kind of advanced feel for the game, but you can tell that this is someone who really does seem to be a student in the game, and it's no question to me now why he was as successful as he was last year.
Yeah, I think it's just really cool when these guys that come on, and you know, not just guys on our show, but when they're doing interviews elsewhere too, a lot of times, so many times you hear how, you know, they're picking each other's brains. You know, it's yes, this guy, like, I'm going to go to Darryl Hernandez, who might be 2 years younger than me, but I'm going to pick his brain. And, you know, Connor Norby looking up to a guy like Taron Vavra and being able to pick his brain, and guys like Adley. I mean, it's really cool to see that at all levels of this organization, it truly does seem to be one unit working towards that one goal. Something that we've talked about a lot of times with the coaching staff and how they approach this. To see that among the players, I think it's just a really cool aspect of this organization. And it's what makes, for me personally, it's one thing that makes watching these guys and covering this organization so much more fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're now going to have some new prospects to talk about as the January 15th international signing period took place over the weekend. And as is the case usually with international free agency signing periods, all of the big deals were made on day one. And for the Baltimore Orioles, that was signing shortstop Luis Almeida to a $2.3 million signing bonus, which is the largest bonus a franchise has ever given out to a Latin American amateur player. And if you've been keeping score, you know that that is the third consecutive international signing period in which the Orioles set that record, as Samuel Basayo was paid $1.3 million in 2021 before Braylon Tavera received $1.7 million last year. Almeida has a very interesting background. He was actually born in the United States and did not move to the Dominican Republic until he was 15, as he and his family moved there to care for his grandmother, who has Alzheimer's disease. Up to that point, Almeida was considered a rising prospect in the 2025 MLB amateur draft class. Now, because of the move to the Dominican Republic, he's eligible to sign sooner, and he comes to terms with the Orioles. And the profile in Almeida sounds like a lot of the kind of players that the Orioles go after. Young, projectable, athletic, up-the-middle players, in Almeida's case, a shortstop, with good strike zone judgment and a good arm. That is what most scouting reports suggest that he has. MLB Pipeline had him as the 20th best international prospect for this signing period. Baseball America had him at 17th. MLB Pipeline, in particular, gave high praise to his arm, right now grading it as a 55 on the 20 to 80 scouting scale, and noting that it could, that he, quote, projects to have a plus arm. What's also interesting about Almeida is that because of that background, where he actually developed much of his amateur baseball career in the United States, he could, in fact, skip the Dominican Summer League this year. We don't know for sure that that's going to be the case, but it is possible that Almeida will be in the FCL this year. So, Nick, we've been learning more about Almeida over the last few months as rumors picked up that the Orioles were going to sign him, and then even more after they agreed with terms with him this past weekend. So what are your thoughts on this pickup?
I'm getting more and more excited about Almeida, and I think it's largely due to the fact that, like you mentioned, his background is so unique. He played baseball here in the United States up until he was 15 years old. He was, you know, on the radar of pretty much every major college program, and so we have a lot more information about him. He was able to, he did an interview, an intro press conference there with Kobe Perez on signing day, which was amazing to watch. But yeah, I think you mentioned kind of his profile there, and I just think he fits in the perfectly into kind of what we've seen the last couple of years. You look at Gunnar Henderson and Jackson Holliday, for example. This is what I was thinking of as you're trying to read up more about Almeida. Holliday and Henderson were two very young, up-the-middle bats with a ton of potential. But I think Gunnar reached the big leagues not long after his 21st birthday. Holliday, as Tim DeJean alluded to last week, you guys, awesome interview there. He could possibly end next year in Double A as a 19-year-old. So I think if the player development process goes right there, you're looking at two guys who are going to be pushed super aggressively. And with Almeida, yeah, he's just 16. And I know there's all this talk of could he skip the DSL? But Kobe Perez did say in that interview, like, we're going to slow down. We're going to take it slow with him, make sure we do this right. He is still just a 16-year-old kid, doesn't turn 17, I think, until April, sometime in April. So let him develop. But I don't think it's crazy to think we're looking, the kid just signed last week, looking way ahead. But I think he's on that same type of trajectory, though. He's a young kid who the organization can be aggressive with once he gets in and starts playing. And he's got an enormously high ceiling. That's why the Orioles paid him $2.3 million. And with his amateur background being so much different than his peers, I just don't think it's crazy to think that he could be an 18-year-old kid ending next year in high A. I don't think that's crazy to think about if a lot goes right between now and then. So I think it's that same signing. And in 2 years, after he's played, got some more minor league games under his belt, in 2 years, you're going to be looking at another middle infielder in the system. And you're like, what are we going to do with him? We got another one down here in the pipeline. And it's just really cool to see this organization just stack this talent like this.
Yeah, and I think there's a reason you go for up-the-middle players. And I think there's in particular a reason you go for up-the-middle players like Almeida, because you can look at their profile, you can look at the reports and realize that this is not someone who's probably going to be playing first base in 3 years. He's got the ability to move around a little bit. The reports, you know, reports that I've read seem to suggest that he could move over the third base if he outgrows shortstop. And, you know, honestly, I don't think that's a guarantee that he will. We're going to have to see how he looks, but that's not always going to happen. So it is possible you've got a guy who could stick at shortstop.
Yeah. And something else that stood out to me too, in listening to Kobe Perez's interview right after those initial signs were announced, the first thing, I can't remember who asked him, but someone asked kind of what led to this signing. And Perez talked about how they first saw Almeida in a tournament in Mexico, and then seeing that he's from New Jersey, there's Jersey connections, the Orioles were able to do some background work there. And one of the first things Perez started talking about was Almeida's family and where he comes from and the good head on his shoulders and, you know, what his parents did for a living. And just, you know, it's another instance of this organization making sure they bring in these high character guys. It's leaders, true team players. A couple of these guys, I think we're going to highlight a few that stood out to us, but the Orioles player development Twitter account highlighted a couple of these signings, and you saw that in some of their descriptions, like a leader, true leader on the field. And so it's really cool. There are so many similarities I'm seeing between how they go about attacking the amateur draft and now how they're attacking the international side of this. Now that this organization is, you know, or this regime is now, what, 4 years into this, three, 4 years into this, you're starting to see guys who they've been connected with for many years. They've formed tight relationships with. The Orioles have established their presence in Venezuela, for one. I know a lot of signings coming out of Venezuela, but they're establishing their presence in the DR again. And it's really cool to see these higher and higher bonuses, bigger and bigger talents deciding to join this organization. And Almeida mentioned it. He said, in his opinion, this is the best farm system in baseball. And he thinks this organization is going to be the best one to help him develop as a player and a person. And he said from the start, the Orioles were the team that he wanted to sign with. And that's really cool to start seeing these international guys being excited to join Baltimore. As we know, it's been an area of baseball that I know I never paid attention to growing up because the Orioles weren't players in this. So it's fun to be looking at this from a different angle now.
Yeah, I think it's actually worth taking a step back and looking at the big picture of what has happened since Mike Elias took over the baseball operations in this organization and brought in Kobe Perez. I think everyone knew that becoming big players in Latin America and being more aggressive international free agency was something the Orioles had to do if they were going to compete with the other 29 teams in Major League Baseball, because it was clear that they were so far behind the curve before that. I don't know that I necessarily saw sort of the acceleration in those efforts coming the way that they have, where you have this new academy coming in Dominican Republic. That's going to be a major investment that it should be finished soon, hopefully. You've seen record bonuses giving out in three straight off seasons. And you're looking not just at that, but then, you know, as I pointed out in a piece of Baltimore Sports and Life yesterday, probably the biggest success story so far of the international free agents that have been signed by Mike Elias and Kobe Perez is Frederick Bencosme, who got $10,000. Was not a guy that was, you know, on any big list going into that signing period in 2020. Someone who really did not get attention nationally until last year. And he's now probably a consensus top 30 prospect in this organization. So when you really step back, the Orioles are being more aggressive, but there are signs there they're being smart about it too. And I should stress that we're years away probably from knowing if any of this is going to work or how much of it is going to work, but there are some very early positive signs here.
Yeah, it's kind of like I mentioned how the Orioles attack the amateur draft versus what they're doing on the international side of things now. I think it's the same strategy also there in that in those first couple of picks, you're going for your Adley, you're going for Colton Cowser, you're going for your Jackson Holliday. You're going for these high ceiling guys, these guys that you know you can be aggressive with early on in their development. And they're up for that challenge, but you know, the ceiling is there, guys you can dream on. And that's, you know, Michael Hernandez, we know he hasn't panned out yet, but he's still a young player. That's still someone that you can still dream on him. Samuel Basayo is a guy who is getting all the national love at this point. We're going to get to see him now in Delmarva next year where he could really take off. You're seeing that the top ends of these class, hopefully Braylon Tavera makes a lot of noise this upcoming season, but you're seeing these high-end guys, Almeida this year with the high ceilings, but you mentioned Bencosme being a top 30 prospect now signed for $10,000. Aaron Estrada statistically was a guy who stood out in last year's draft class, and he was no one talked about last year. I don't even think his name was brought up in our conversation with Kobe Perez when he was on after last year's signing class. So it's the same thing where go big at the top and then just cast this wide net. You saw, what, 27 signings? It's this wide net of players now where, yeah, you hope a few pan out, but you get guys that have traits that you like and you let the player development staff go to work and hopefully a few pan out. And I think a few guys definitely look interesting, but it's really fun to see who's going to start coming out of here. Who are the standouts going to be starting next year? We're going to start seeing more of those guys. I think Perez had a really cool analogy, described it as a flower. You know, you plant the seed. Well, now we're starting to see it come out of the dirt. It's not a full-on flower yet, but we're starting to see that sprout. And these are Basayo reaching Delmarva. Hopefully, Braylon Tavera, Michael Hernandez, and the FCL, maybe one or two of those guys reaching Delmarva by the end of the year. We're starting to see them trickle up. And clearly, it's taken not a long time to get one of the top international free agents this year. I think Baseball America, I don't know with final numbers being reported if Almeida was still a top 20 in terms of money received, but projected for, you know, was the 16th highest signing bonus in this class. In just 3 years, they went from that, from getting nobody to pretty much to signing one of the top 10, top 15 guys in this class. So it's going to be really fun to start seeing these classes in 2-3 years, even until the draft, I guess, comes into play, which I'm sure will be that. Then they'll change the whole game up, but.
We want to focus on the whole class. The Orioles announced that they had come to terms with 27 players over the course of the weekend. Almeida's bonus was the highest of that group at $2.3 million. It was, in fact, the only bonus to cross the $1 million threshold. But there still seems to be a lot of interesting players that the Orioles picked up, including in the infield. And I think that's Nick has found someone there that he wants to highlight.
Yeah, some of these infielders, there's another Amparo, which I just thought was pretty cool. But I like Jose Mejia. And again, we've never watched these guys. We're going strictly off what the organization is putting out there right now. But and a lot of digging on Instagram for videos. Luckily, these kids love to do it for the gram. I don't know if the kids still say that, but you know, they still like to put a lot of their highlights on Instagram, which thank you for that. So we get to see something. Jose Mejia stood out to me. He was also part of the few that the Orioles player development Twitter account highlighted, which I think they do that for a reason. But he's listed as an infielder. A lot of the videos are him playing at shortstop. But I just think that without knowing his exact height, weight right now, just going off, you know, these Instagram videos and other sources, he looks like someone to me that if he could hit one last growth spurt, I don't know. I think he's 17. I think he's 17 or 18. I can't remember his birthday off the top of my head. But if he could hit one last growth spurt and add like an inch or two and fill out that frame, he becomes, I think, one of the bigger prospects you can dream on physically in this class. Because according to the Orioles notes, he projects for a 60 hit tool with 50 power. And you look at some of the video, and in my opinion, my untrained eyes see, yeah, I see the power. I see a lot of power potential. They talked about how he's a natural leader with good instincts, already a strong fastball hitter who can see spin. So if this is a 16, 17-year-old kid who's already hitting good fastball. Fastball is good velo. If he's already picking up spin, I think this is a kid who's going to be advanced when he gets to the DSL. I just think he's one of about 10 guys who I have my eye on coming into next year, and just see statistically who stands out in the DSL and what kind of information we get from the limited resources that come out of the DSL.
Yeah, we should stress it's very limited resources. And as we've talked about a lot on this show, we try to avoid scouting the stat line as much as possible. But with the Dominican Summer League, we tend to look at the walk to strikeout numbers for hitters and try to use that as a gauge for how we think they're going to perform. And based on at least what the Orioles have said about Mejia, he seems to be the kind of guy that should thrive in that area next year. And what's interesting to me is that when you look at those potential scouting grades, where you're talking about someone who would have a hit tool of 60 and power of 50 at second base, that is really good for that position. So I agree with you. Mejia was a guy that stood out to me. One of the signings that I really, really am interested in is right-handed pitcher Keeler Morfe. He signed for $200,000 out of Venezuela. And the Orioles note that he has a fastball that touches 95 miles an hour with sinking action and plus command. He has that to go with a slider that runs 81 to 83 miles an hour and an 85 to 87 mile per hour changeup that the Orioles also said is plus command. What stood out to me in the videos is that it just looks like he has a very natural, comfortable delivery. I feel like when you see a lot of young pitchers, especially ones that have not really filled out yet, and Morfe looks like a guy who still has room to grow at 16 years old, sometimes the deliveries look like they're really trying to maximize that effort. Morfe's, to me, looked really smooth, and the fact that he's able to hit 95 now is really encouraging. And he compared that with what seemed to be two pretty good secondaries.
Yeah, he was the guy that I was going to highlight if you didn't jot him down first, because that stood out to me instantly. Like, Almeida is obviously the gem of this class right now, but, man, when you put out that video and say, this is a 16-year-old kid, 17-year-old kid who's throwing 95 already with a slider and 85, 87 mile an hour, a changeup with plus command. Like, that's what caught me. The changeup with plus command. Like, yes, please. I don't think any pitcher in last year's class really stood out to me like Morfe did when I watched his videos. Henry Tejada was the guy who really stood out to me in last year's class, and he just got busted for like PEDs and is going to like not pitch next year. And we've seen a couple of interesting arms, but when you see Morfe and those numbers, like you hear all the time about pitchers in the amateur draft class, the guys coming up at the high school ranks, like He's got a changeup, a slight feel for a changeup, but you know, he's never had to throw it in high school because he can blow everybody away with 95 mile an hour, 96 mile an hour heat. But now if you got the 17-year-old international kid who's got, you know, 10, 12 mile an hour separation between the fastball and changeup, he's got plus command of a changeup already, that's got me excited to watch more Fay pitch for sure. Him and another arm too that I was intrigued by, I was looking for more information about him, but again, pretty limited, Xavier Alvaro. He was out of Cuba, a Cuban pitcher they signed. He gave $80,000 to. He had a couple of interesting videos as well. Thicker kid, big body guy who I think looks like he can pound the strike zone in some of the videos that I've seen. I'm anxious to learn more about him, and considering he's got the Cuban background and what his story is, but definitely some interesting arms. And, you know, like we've heard from a lot of people in this organization, on the international side of things, like, these guys are coming, and the organization seems genuinely excited about the guys that they're able to bring in here.
Speaking of pitchers, what stood out to me was the Orioles write-up of Francisco Morel. Now, you know, when you issue a press release announcing your international free agency class and you pick players to highlight, you're obviously going to point out the positive attributes. But what I found interesting was that their report about Morel, they explicitly said that he projects as a middle-of-the-rotation starter, which is not an easy thing to do with a 17-year-old player, to project them as a mid-rotation guy. But when you look at what he reportedly has to offer, a fastball that reaches 92 miles an hour with a lot of movement and plus life, a decent changeup, and that's how the Orioles phrased it, to go with a 12-6 curveball. Now, from the left side at 17 years old to be throwing 92 with a changeup and a curveball is a great place to start. So, again, you know, you're looking at a long-term development, but it seems like this is a pitcher who would have some of the ingredients that you would want.
I'm watching his video right now, and I love that breaker. He gets behind that pitch a little bit. He arches that back, and it just falls in beautifully. It's the pitchers that I'm kind of most intrigued to see by, because it's not the guys – we talk about the Houston Astros model all the time. It's not the guys that they gave big signing bonuses to. It's guys they signed later in the process. It's guys they gave the minimum to who are now contributing to a World Series team. So this is where the area that I'm most intrigued by, because I want to see, is some of that magic going to work its way here in Baltimore, and which of these guys start to stand out for us. And we're going to start to see more of these guys next year in the FCL and in Delmarva, but you know, we're seeing Davy Cruz already last year and some other guys. It's good to see more influx of these types of pitchers. It's all these pitchers, it seems like they're bigger kids, they're tall, they're already got a good frame. And if they're only 17 years old, there's a lot of, you talk about projection all the time, there's a lot of physical projection with these guys. Looking at Moreo right now, I mean, could he be throwing 96, 97 in 5 years and being a DL Hall type pitcher? I mean, it's fun to, this is the part that I love. It's just what could become of these kids. They're so young. These highlights are so good. Obviously, they're good highlight tapes, but it's fun to dream on what these guys can become in a couple of years in this player development system.
Now, not that we view or should view signing bonuses as an indication of prospect status. And if you look at our lists over the years, you'll see that that is the case, where we're not always going to look at a signing bonus to determine a player's prospect status. But for listeners who were wondering how the bonus money was distributed, as I noted earlier, Almeida was the only player to receive a bonus that was seven figures. The second highest bonus reported by multiple sources, including The Athletic, was Joshua Lorenzo, who received $500,000. The Orioles described Lorenzo as a shortstop with immense power, a loose swing, and plus bat speed. And also apparently shows loose defensive action, good footwork, and a plus arm over from the left side of the infield. So kind of sounds familiar, projectable bat, shortstop with a good arm. Again, we're going to have to see how he performs once he gets into the organization, but clearly an interesting skill set already.
Yeah, and like you mentioned, I mean, yeah, the signing bonuses, you got Almeida, and outside of him, there's not a lot of other names that got a ton of money. But I like this strategy, especially right now as you're continuing to fill out the lower levels of the minor leagues, your DSL rosters, your FCL rosters. and you're still establishing your presence in a lot of these countries, I think this is a good strategy just to cast this wide net, see what kind of players you get. Again, just go after the pitchers who have the traits you like. If you know that, yeah, I've already got a good changeup, I've already got good fastball velo, clearly this organization feels confident in their ability to teach a slider, all right, we're going to be able to work with you. And so, yeah, it's cool. And I also like that they left that little extra money. I would not be shocked. Perez talked about leaving about $500,000 left over?
Yeah, roughly around $500,000.
In case another Cesar Prieto situation pops up, I'm interested to see over the next couple of weeks, or over the next couple of months even, because even last year they were signing guys in May, June, and July to international deals. But I'm going to be interested to see if the Orioles get aggressive with anyone else that's hanging around, or if another Prieto situation does pop up, are the Orioles the team that's going to be the aggressive one there? But I like that idea also, leaving a little bit on the table. And you've got 27 guys now to bring in and work with. Even the most interesting one, though, I just want to see him play because I think it's just a cool story. Jorge Mateo's brother, bringing him into the organization, I thought that was pretty cool. Catcher out of the DR. That was pretty awesome to see. And to see Jorge Mateo there celebrating with all the guys, I imagine that was pretty cool for especially the Dominican Republican players that the Orioles signed, to have someone like Mateo there. I can imagine that was a pretty special day for a lot of those kids.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I'll wrap up our discussion here about the international signings with this, which is that we have always talked about maybe the international signings compared to the draft, which one raises the floor of the farm system versus which one raises the ceiling. You factor in two of the prospects that the Orioles picked up in trades in recent years. So, Nick, looking at this class, would you say the Orioles have raised the ceiling of the farm system, have raised the floor, or perhaps a little bit of both?
I still think it's the ceiling. I do like that analogy a lot still because, I mean, you look at Almeida's potential, these guys that we just highlighted, you look at their potential. Yeah, it's very high, but there's also a lot can go wrong here. I mean, some of these are still 16, 17-year-old kids. They've got life-changing money. A lot of these kids are getting life-changing money right now for not only them, but their families, their friends. A lot's going to change. They're moving. A lot of these guys that, you know, were signed out of Cuba or Colombia, Venezuela, looking at the list, see if there's anything else. Looks like just Venezuela, the DR, one pitcher from Colombia, and then one pitcher from Cuba. These guys who aren't from the DR, they're going to move to a different country right now and have to, you know, be working out the Orioles establishment there. But a lot's going to change for them. And I actually went back and read Future Value, Eric Longenhagen and Kylie McDaniel's book. Still a very relevant book, still an awesome read if you haven't read it. There are two chapters on the J2 period, but now it's the J15 period. And they talk a lot about the changes that these kids have to go through. Like a lot of these guys, it's not just the money, but access in some players' instance, access to food and being able to control the nutrition and learn the nutrition side of things, and how there are some guys, you know, they gain 30, 40 pounds and, you know, they're not able to cut it anymore. We know a large percentage of these guys are not going to make it to full season ball, but that's why I like you raise the ceiling, because the potential is enormous, but yeah, the floor is certainly extremely low with these guys.
That's absolutely something we're going to be interested in following going forward. Nick, before we wrap up tonight, any final thoughts?
I am excited for baseball now. We're just a couple of weeks away. It's that period where we're so close because spring training is just a couple of weeks away, but we're so far away still because the minor league season doesn't start till April. But yeah, it's fun. I'm glad to be back this week. Hopefully Bob is back next week and the three of us can look forward to one step closer to opening day.
Yeah, absolutely. We plan for all three of us to be back on the air next week. In the meantime, be sure to follow us on Twitter at BSL on the Verge. You can also check out our accounts on Facebook and Instagram. Also, be sure to sign up for our Patreon community for as little as $3 a month. You'll have access to a WhatsApp chat. And then for our higher tiers of Patreon, you will be able to see daily content from us, including our continuing countdown of the top 50 prospects in the Orioles farm system. As Nick noted earlier in the show, we're about to release number 31, which is going to have a little surprise interview for our patrons. So you're going to want to be sure to check that out. And then, of course, after that, we've got more players to cover. So we still got a ways to go revealing our top 50 prospect list. So be sure to get in on that. And check out BaltimoreSportsAndLife.com for all the latest coverage on the NFL playoffs, the Orioles, college sports, and more. And while you're there, hop on the message board and join the discussion with fellow readers of the site as well as contributors. Thank you so much to our guest, Connor Norby, tonight for a great interview and for his time in sharing his insight into his process of developing in the Orioles farm system. We look forward to being back on the air next week for Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. This is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to On the Verge.
That'll do it for this week's episode of On the Verge. Be sure to check out our Patreon page where you can help show your support for the show and get bonus content, including monthly top 50 updates to our prospect list and daily game recaps during the season and much, much more.
Why don't more infant formula companies use organic, grass-fed whole milk instead of skim? Why don't more infant formula companies use the latest breast milk science? Why don't more infant formula companies run their own clinical trials? Why don't more infant formula companies use more of the proteins found in breast milk? Why don't more infant formula companies have their own factories instead of outsourcing their manufacturing? We wondered the same thing. So we made ByHeart, a better formula for formula. Learn more at ByHeart.com.
For the ones who get it done, the most important part is the one you need now. And the best partner is the one who can deliver. That's why millions of maintenance and repair pros trust Grainger. Because we have professional-grade supplies for every industry, even hard-to-find products. And we have same-day pickup and next-day delivery on most orders. But most importantly, we have an unwavering commitment to help keep you up and running. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.